Have you got some great songs but no one is listening? Are you struggling to find your audience? Worry no longer. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book and download a copy of the free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. It talks about growing your fan base, finding your niche, and getting your music out there. The essential foundations you need and the steps to take to get your music heard. How to Get Your Music Heard. Get it now at musiciansmap.org/free-book. Welcome to the Musicians Map podcast. I was in Melbourne a few weeks ago for the wedding of some good mates, and the bride plays in a really cool band called Moody Beaches. They are killing it at the moment, and so naturally I wanted to do a podcast with a couple of the ladies from the band. But for one reason or another, we just couldn't find the time or motivation, and it just didn't work out. However, I did have the pleasure of meeting a member of the band whom I hadn't met before, and she agreed to have a chat not just about Moody Beaches, but the four other musical projects she's involved in. This week, my guest is Julia Watt. Julia is a drummer from Melbourne who has toured all over the world. She's played countless shows, made some kick-ass recordings, and is genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met. We talk about her multiple creative outlets, forming musical and music industry relationships, making gigs fun, when to make a recording, music videos, and international touring. We caught up over Skype.
We have five bands at the moment, but one of them is breaking up, so we'll be down to four. So I've got, you know, plenty of room on my dance card for new projects.
See, some people would say that you wouldn't.
I know. Yeah, it is pretty ridiculous. I'm very organised and have a few online shared calendars, which make it all possible. But yeah, it is a juggling act. But it's, for me, I really love playing, and I love playing as much as possible. So for any one of my bands, like, it doesn't make sense to play every week because no one's going to come and see you play every week. So for me to be able to play as frequently as I like, I just find myself in multiple projects, but sure, they also offer me many different things, which is a big reason why I do it too.
Yeah. Which is the longest running? Is it La Bastard?
Yeah, La Bastard would be the longest one. So that's must be nearly 7 years that we've been together, and that's actually the band that's breaking up. So yeah. I know. We had a big G&M a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, we've sort of been drifting and going our separate ways, and it just feels like it's time. You know, bands end up being like relationships, and you get to a point where, you know, maybe, I guess we've got the 7 year itch.
Yeah.
we're not going to stick it out.
How can you kind of maybe talk about how you form these relationships to start with?
La Bastard, for me, a friend of mine used to do roller derby. And at the time, Anna from La Bastard was doing roller derby as well. So my friend, who I'd met from years before when I was working in Circus Oz, she knew that I was sort of in between jobs and had a bit of time. And she just said to me, oh, my friend is looking for a drummer for their band. Are you interested? And so generally in my career, I've always said yes pretty quickly to things and then, you know, gone to suss it out, seen what it's like and figure out if I like it and want to do it. So that's pretty much what I did. Like, I said yes, and then, yeah, the people in La Bastard got in touch with me and sent me, they'd recorded a demo, which ended up being their first album, and they sent me all those songs. I learnt them all, went and had a rehearsal with them, and they were all happy with what I was doing and how I was playing it, and it just went from there. So I essentially didn't know them at all, so it worked out pretty well, and being able to, you know, form friendships and relationships with people from nothing and have a 7 year career with them is pretty good going.
Do you think it's once you've kind of made that step and started jamming with essentially randoms, that it's sort of a snowball effect from that point, you know, making connections throughout the scene?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because I personally really like working with people that I don't necessarily know too well because of those new doorways that it opens up and all these other people that you didn't know existed in your scene, or maybe it's a slightly different genre. And in Melbourne in particular, like the crews of people that you meet, it can be quite genre specific. So I like to play in different genres and meet different people and, yeah, just expand your horizons and meet some amazing people that you maybe wouldn't have crossed paths with if you didn't, you know, take that risk in the first place and go, yeah, I'm going to join a band with these people I don't know at all, and
yeah,
who knows how crazy they might be or how fun they might be. I'm just going to go and give it a go.
And so are you kind of exclusive to genres that you already like? What genres are you into?
No, not at all. I'm actually into pretty much everything. And I mean, before playing with La Bastard, I mean, at the start of La Bastard, it was a lot of rockabilly, I guess, into psychobilly stuff, which is music that I'd never played before. So a lot of the time for me when I'm getting into a new band, it's often a genre that I don't know much about or I like listening to but haven't played before. So I like to just challenge myself in new ways and get out of my comfort zone so that I can learn something else about music and about drumming and just, yeah, try to approach things differently.
Just take that leap and kind of
pretty much
see where you fall.
And, and often it's terrifying and, you know, you've practiced all these things and you've gotten to this level of playing in a certain genre or with certain people, and then you get to this new thing and everything you've learnt is useless and you have to sort of start again but it's good.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're going to plateau and just, yeah, stay there and get really bored.
I mean, it'd make you incredibly diverse as a musician, but as a person as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, you know, you meet new people, you discover new music that's fascinating, and I think you take lots of little things from all of the things you were learning along the way and, yeah, put it towards the bigger picture, and you've got all that stuff to fall back on now and this greater net of knowledge that I guess you get along the way.
Yeah. So how did that lead to your most recent – was Moody Beaches your most recent project?
Yes.
Actually,
there is a different one, but Moody Beaches is pretty recent.
So how did that come about? How did kind of you fall into that?
Well, Anna and I became really good friends throughout the course of playing in La Bastard. And while I've been in La Bastard, I've always been in multiple projects. And I think, you know, Anna was only doing La Bastard, and then she wanted to, you know, spread her wings and do something a little bit different and have a different creative process. I guess she had a vision of what she wanted to do. And then she had a friend of hers, Jess, who is the other member in Moody Beaches. They went to high school together and they were in a band when they were, you know, in early high school. So they wanted to start playing music together again. And yeah, it was just really casual and relaxed. And Anna just said to me, oh, I've been, you know, doing some demos. She's like, when we're ready for a drummer, you know, would you come and have a play? And I was like, yeah, of course I would. And then I went and had a jam with the girls, and it felt like it wasn't long after that we were doing a photo shoot. And I thought to myself, I think I'm in another band.
Yeah.
Like, oh, whoops.
It's happened again.
Damn it.
Because I know Jess and I've watched Moody Beaches from the start,
yeah,
it seems like everything has moved really, really quickly, and you guys have just shot up so fast.
Yes.
Why and how?
It's just because we're really amazing.
Yeah, well, aside from the obvious.
Well, I think it's a combination of all female bands being really popular at the moment in Melbourne. I think in the world in general, like, women in music now is a great time. And I think the style of music is also quite popular, particularly in Melbourne. I don't know about the rest of the world, but there's definitely a scene for this sort of post-punky, garagey sort of stuff at the moment. So it's a combination of just, yeah, really good timing, but also Jess and Anna are really great at molding the band and pushing it in the right directions, and really good with the social media and collectively we already have all these great contacts in Melbourne and we're already in all these different circles. So kind of reaching out to people that we know are going to like what we're doing, and it's just been working. Like, it's, yeah, not that any of it's really been overly calculated on our behalf, but it's just been falling into the ears of the right people, and yeah, it's been picked up and people seem to really love it, which is amazing for us. And
yeah,
I guess it's also apparent that we're just having so much fun hanging out with each other, playing music, and that's kind of infectious as well, and people want to be around that. So
yeah, it's yeah, good, that's good totally true. And it's, you know, it's the experience that you all bring to the project.
Yeah,
it's not your first group, you know, these aren't the first songs you've written, it's not the first time you've organized gigs and, you know,
exactly,
hooked up with promoters and done artwork and things. So all that experience comes together and creates a really slick kind of product.
And yeah, it's just been really easy. That's definitely a big part of it. And we're putting on shows we want to go to, and we're doing, like, you know, we're putting a bit more emphasis on having little parties and just things that we want to go to. And yeah, I guess when, like, you know, we're all in our mid-30s now, so there's a lot of things you don't want to do anymore, and you just make things a bit nicer for yourself, and that attracts people,
yeah,
which is understandable.
Things like organizing gigs on boats.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, how did you do that?
There's a few other people that have done gigs on boats in Melbourne, and there's regular sort of events, like the boat we ended up using has like a blues cruise and a reggae cruise. And I guess it, for me, like, because I did most of the organising for it, I sort of, in Victoria and in a lot of Australia, there's just so many festivals or mini festivals or cool gigs, and there's all these things that you always want to be a part of, but you're often applying for things and you don't get accepted, or, you know, it's just hard. There's a lot of competition. So I thought, well, let's just organize it ourselves. Like, if it's what we really want to do, let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just went and, like, literally inspected a few boats and then I just figured out all the logistics and thought, can we actually afford to do this? And if it doesn't really work out, will we be in serious debt, or will it, life still be okay, you know?
Yeah.
So I just spent a couple of months organizing all the finer points and found the right boat that was the cheapest overall, and essentially booked a fair chunk of my own bands, because I thought to myself, if it doesn't sell well, who can I get to play that won't be annoyed if there's no money? And I was like, okay, I play in a lot of bands, so yeah, I'll play in three of the bands and get roped in a couple of friends. And yeah, it all worked out.
And I thought it was brilliant because essentially when people are on the boat and the boat leaves, they can't, you know, leave the gig or anything. They're trapped.
Captive audience.
Yeah.
I know. It was so fun because people do roll in. They're like, oh, but when are you playing? I'll just come then, or I might go to this other gig first and come later. But it's really nice to have like everyone there for every band, and it's just so much more fun. Like, and that's how, I guess, when you're booking a show at a pub, like, it's how you want the night to be, but it's just never going to happen, I guess.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot of the Moody Beaches shows, it's what you kind of said before, you're putting on shows that you want to play. And it seems like you're creating a fun place for other people, you know, to come to, that maybe be more appealing than if you just went, we're playing a gig with four bands at $10 at a pub, come on down. You know, there's always something else happening, or there's some cool art and a little thing, like...
Yeah, that's exactly what we want to do, because, I mean, all of us have been playing gigs for years and going to see gigs for years that, like, you know, you put on a good show and that's part of why people are going to come, but it's just fun to have extra things, and it's more fun for us as the organisers to bring this extra element. It's like, oh, what are we going to do this time? Like,
yeah.
But I'm sure we're probably going to get to a point pretty soon where we'll be like, what else are we going to do? Like, God.
Trapeze or...
Yeah. Who knows what will be at the next one, but it'll be something stupid.
it's so important, I think it is, because especially in a big city, there are lots of options. People become so complacent.
Definitely.
I've been there, you know, and you just go, I can't be bothered going out to see some band. I don't know. Yeah. But if you make it a fun place to go that where people want to go and buy tickets, and they're going to tell their friends, and then they're going to come to the next one, and you're building this fan base, so they're going to follow you around.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, well, it's fun. Yeah, I want to go to these gigs, and it just so happens that I'm playing at them as well. But yeah, if I wasn't, I'd still be like, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So are you doing this full time, or have you got a job as well?
I go on and off between being full-time musician and having a normal job. I like to classify the rest of the world as normal. I worked in admin for 5 years, and I stopped doing that last year in probably September or October. And so I've essentially been having a great time spending all my savings and, you know, doing little bits of work here and there.
Yeah.
But for me, it's very up and down. Like, I have had several times in my life where I've been professional musician and just, you know, making the dosh, doing maybe gigs I don't love to do. But nowadays I find it harder to do anything that I'm not passionate about. So I'm currently teaching and, yeah, playing in five bands and doing some DJ gigs and trying to do fun things. But obviously, you know, once my little nest egg runs out, I will be looking for something else.
And you want to avoid playing music as a job, like, you know?
Yeah, I do. I've done a lot of that in the past, and I just find I can't justify giving up my weekends to play at someone's wedding or to just play in a corporate band for an event or function that I just don't care about. Mm. And because I'd much rather be playing a gig at a small pub with a band that I love and playing music that I really love and feel passionately about and, you know, walking away with being paid by two beers than spending my night with a bunch of assholes and getting paid really well. Because I've done a lot of it over the years, I know that it's not for me anymore.
Yeah.
And I could definitely make a decent living off that, but I wouldn't have time for any original music. So for me, that's like, you know, it would become work, and it just takes away all of my love for it.
Is that partly because it takes up the same time that you have for, you know, your original stuff, you know, like
it's
nights and weekends and stuff?
It's that and the content. So I have to, you know, I have to play music that I just don't like. Like, you know, top 40 songs and a back catalogue of classic bogan hits that, you know, I mean, I do know a lot of them from years of doing that work. But it's just, you know, when I have to sit down and learn three sets worth of crappy covers, it's really uninspiring. And yeah, I mean, there was a time in my life where I kind of enjoyed those challenges and learning new songs, but it feels like it was a long time ago for me now, like probably 15 years ago. I was like, yeah, this is fun. I can have fun with this song. Like, who doesn't want to know K-San? It was like, wait, I don't want to know that. And now it's burnt into my brain.
Yeah. What about when bands are starting out, at what kind of point, since you've done it so many times, when do you think bands should be looking at making a recording, a professional recording is what I mean?
Definitely once the songs have been played live a lot. Until you feel really comfortable and confident with the songs, I don't think you should record them, because, I mean, a lot of bands do record quite early on because they feel they need a demo or they need some kind of presence online so people can hear what they like. But it's generally going to be a really rough version of what the band really sounds like.
Yeah.
And I feel like until you've done a solid stretch of gigs and really run the songs in, there's just not much point recording them, because they're going to change the more you play them and you'll get to know them more as a band, and you'll start to play better with each other and get used to playing with each other. And yeah, the songs will just develop and grow the more time you spend with them. So if you were gigging once a week for 3 months or 3 or 4 months, then you might be at a good point to record. But yeah, you just, whenever the songs feel really comfortable and you're sure you really like them, because sometimes you'll write a song as a band and then play it live for a little while, and then you'd be like, actually, I don't like that song, and no one likes it, or, you know, it was just a song written so you could get to your first gig, and it sort of was padding out the set.
Yep.
So, yeah, but that's how I generally approach it, is like, make sure you're all comfortable and confident, and, yeah, you want to go into the studio and do 2 takes and have the song, because you all know the song so well. It's not a hard thing to do, and you're not overdubbing for days. And
yeah. There's a whole other side to it, I think, is you're getting feedback from your audience directly when you're playing gigs. And so you know which of your 8 songs are the best 5 because you can tell who's dancing and who's not. And, you know.
Yeah.
But there's also a bit of a catch 22. Sometimes you need a recording to get gigs.
Sometimes, yeah.
So maybe, what do you think? Like a phone, do something on your phone in your practice room, or like a little one song music video or a quick demo?
If you just needed one sort of thing, like a cute video would be great, because people, like, they do want to see what you look like. They want to see kind of how you're going to be performing. So, I mean, I think nowadays, like, we do have so many handheld devices and small things that it's actually quite easy to get a fairly decent sounding recording, just so people can get the gist of what you're doing. Mm. But if you've got visuals to go along with that, then all the better, because people are going to judge the audio recording less harshly if there's some visuals going along with it, I find.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would do anyway.
Now, talking about music videos, I just watched the Hot Wings Flower on the Floor, Flower on the Floor video. And it blew my mind. It's so amazing.
That was so much fun to make. And it gives you a real idea of what the band members in Hot Wings are really like.
Yeah.
Like collective idiots.
And how do you approach making a video like that? You know, where did you get the idea? How do you fund it? Who are you working with on a project like that?
Well, with Hot Wings, we have all been best friends for a really long time. Probably, God, how long has it been? Like 17 years or so. So we're all like just the greatest of friends. And Scott and Liz, who are in Hot Wings, we were in a band previously for 10 years called the Charlies. And now we're in Hot Wings together with our good friend Rob. And we are all just the biggest dickheads when we get together, and we talk so much shit and always have stupid ideas for things, and just, you know, love when we get together for rehearsal. Like, we play songs for about 20 minutes and then talk for 2 hours, and then we're like, oh, I should probably play a couple more songs. So we were thinking of ideas for the film clip, and just Scott in particular has all these lavish storylines all the time. And sometimes I'm kind of like, okay, I love it, but we just do not have the budget for that. Like, let's try to think of something else. Or let's take some of those elements and bring it back down to our $20 budget. So, but yeah, for that one, we just came up with a bunch of stupid ideas and wanted to be essentially like this gang, but who thought they were really tough, but really weren't tough at all. And the whole point of the clip is obviously to show that we're getting beaten up by kids, and yeah, that's our target. Like, we're so tough, all we can take on is a bunch of kids who end up kicking our ass anyway. Yeah, so we had all the ideas, and then we met up with my friend Stuart Simpson, who had done a couple of film clips for La Bastard as well. So I just knew from working with him previously that it'd be really fun and he'd make it really easy. So we caught up with him and talked through our ideas. And then he, you know, from a, you know, film perspective, was like, okay, I can see how that would work, because obviously none of us know how easy it is to actually film our dumb ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, he put it all into perspective, and then, you know, we together sort of found some locations, and then he writes out the timeline, like from 0 to 21 seconds, we'll be filming this on the basketball court, and, you know, figuring out all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah. But yeah, and then we just fund it ourselves. So pay Stuart and then buy all of the props or make things, and obviously ask all of our friends for favors. Like my friend who had children was like, can we borrow your kid and maybe beat them up? Is that all right?
Like, yeah, of course, totally.
Pretty much. She was like, yeah, sure. Do you need more kids? Because he's got friends. So I was like, that'd be great. So how that actually came to be is pretty amazing, really. But, yeah. You know.
What sort of budget are you talking about to make a video like that?
Well, we paid, it would have been about $800. So yep. On the cheap. Like, I was sourcing all the props and costumes and stuff, like op shops, hard rubbish, borrowing things, and just as cheap as we could get it, really. And Stuart gave us, you know, an amazing mates rates deal too, which yep. was made it easy. So yeah. Beg, steal, borrow, ask for favors, and yeah, we, you know, do gigs and save up band money, but obviously you only get so much, but yeah, it all pays itself back eventually through gigs and selling merch and
yeah,
things like that.
And that's it's a kick-ass video for $800.
Oh, really, I know. Yeah, we love it.
Yeah.
we're planning the follow-up.
What about touring? I've noticed that La Bastard has been on 2 European tours.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And Hot Wings went to Mexico.
We did, yes.
Maybe talk about the Europe first. How does it come about? Who's doing the planning? Who's doing the booking?
Well, with La Bastard, Ben, our guitarist, did a lot of the booking, and he's very motivated, very proactive. And essentially we saw like a few other Melbourne bands had been to Europe or to certain parts of Europe, and they'd been in touch with this certain record label, this certain festival. So some of it was, you know, sort of stalking other bands, seeing what they'd done, seeing like, was our style similar? Would it be received equally over there or not? And Ben, being as proactive as he is, he, you know, put the feelers out there and sent a lot of emails and got some interest, and it pretty much snowballed from there. So, like, you know, he emailed this one festival that we knew another band had been to, and they were somewhat interested, and then it turned out they had connections to a French record label who were also became interested. And then we found through a friend's band, they'd used this band booker in Spain. So with all of those avenues together, we got all the tours sorted. So it was obviously still a lot of hard work, and I must admit Ben did most of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of emailing, lots of back and forth with gig dates and countries to visit, and
yeah
just slowly kind of mapping it out. But yeah, on like for our first European tour, it was very much like, you're here, now we'll go all the way up here, but then we'll come back down here and down there. It didn't make any sense. We drove around in circles and did all these amazing crisscross patterns over Europe and spent a lot of time in the van.
yeah. And sort of, are you guys breaking even on a tour like that, or is it costing?
On that tour, we applied for grants as well, touring grants. So we were lucky enough to get a grant, which made it possible.
That's amazing.
So it was really amazing. And if we hadn't have had it, we possibly would have been close to breaking even. I mean, we'd been just a little bit under and all, you know, thrown in a little bit of money, which would have eventually been paid back through gigs. But obviously with the help of the grant, no one was out of pocket, which was really great.
Oh, and then, so good.
Yeah, but then the second time we went, we didn't get a grant, but because we'd done that initial tour, we had a couple of festival shows and we had a few slightly better paying shows. So the trip paid for itself and, you know, made a bit of a profit, and we sold a lot more merchandise and people we're just a bit more familiar with who we were. And yeah, really, you know, obviously very luckily as well, we got onto this great festival and played three times and sold so much merch and made a great deal of money. So that paid for the whole trip. But yeah, you never really know how it's going to turn out.
That's so awesome to be able to kind of, even just to break even on a tour of that scale.
Oh, exactly.
Is massive.
Yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, no small feat by any means. And I mean, we've had a lot of other friends go over and they'll, you know, be a week out and like some of their shows have fallen through and other people are already overseas and then they get shows cancelled. And I think in both of those tours, we only had one or two shows get cancelled when it was, you know, almost too late to reschedule, or we ended up finding another venue, but it wouldn't turn into be a big paying show. But yeah, like there's so much that can go wrong, and yeah, you just have to do the best you can and hope that it's all going to work out, essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for us, it's not like we paved our own road. Like we definitely learnt from other bands that had been and followed in their footsteps and, you know, stole some of their ideas. But I think, yeah, there's sometimes no real need to start from scratch and make life too difficult for yourself.
Sure. Sure. So was that the same for the Mexico tour?
That was hilarious. Like essentially with Hot Wings, if someone has a crazy idea, all of us will be like, yeah, sure, let's do that. And then, you know, use our brains later. But someone, we met this guy who, a musician who'd recently moved from Mexico to Melbourne. And he was like, oh, if you ever want to, he saw us play and he was like, oh, I loved your band. And if you ever want to tour Mexico, let me know because my brother's a booking agent. And we were all like, yeah, of course we want to tour Mexico. And yeah, it ended up being, you know, not quite as glamorous as a La Bastard tour or as successful, but we all had a ball and, you know, no regrets at all. But it was a bit more haphazard and obviously just based on a currency conversion as well. Like you're not going to make much money going to a country with a...
Sure. Yeah. That's actually interesting because you think, oh, well, it's Mexico. It's going to be cheap once we're there. But then the revenue that it does come in once you're there is... Yeah. Relative.
Exactly. Like we, you know, we had vinyl and CDs and t-shirts to sell, but based on what people are earning and what they would spend, like you're selling everything. Well, no, like we got t-shirts printed over there, so we were making a small profit on those. But for our vinyl that we had pressed here, or you know, and CDs, it's you're not really making any profit on that. So it's just, yeah, just a completely different experience compared to the La Bastard tours where, yeah, currency, I mean, yeah, currency is everything, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But really fun to go somewhere completely different and have a different experience too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream. It sounds like a dream. But logistically, was it difficult with language barrier and that kind of thing, or did you kind of rely heavily on this booking agent that you knew?
Oh, well, in Mexico, very fortunately, my girlfriend is fluent in Spanish. So somehow I managed to convince her that it would be a great idea if she came on tour with us.
Yeah, yeah, interpreter.
And she did. Yeah. So we had our own private interpreter, which was amazing because we all very half-heartedly tried to learn some Spanish and... yeah, that went really well. we were blessed by having her with us. And, it was definitely a massive advantage. I think we would have gotten by, but it would have been a very, very different experience. And there would have been a few scenarios, without a doubt, like interacting with the other bands and getting paid for the gig on the night or... It would have been really challenging and I think we would have been more ripped off, to be honest.
Yeah. You're in so many groups. How do you maintain like this creative drive and your creative output? Where does it come from and how do you kind of foster it?
Well, I think because I have all these different projects, I have like different things that I get out of each one. And they, I, you know, it's different styles, different people bring out different parts of me as well. And for me, just playing music in any form is my ultimate happy place. And I always have enthusiasm for it. Even it's the thing, for, like if I'm having a bit of a crap day or feeling a bit down or whatever it is, if I go and play music, you know, whether I'm doing my own practice or just jamming with one of my bands or if I have a gig, but it's like the cloud is lifted and everything's okay. And I just know for me, in, you know, over the course of my life as being a musician and then becoming, you know, professional musician, I just know that no matter what's going on, if I play music, I'm going to feel great. Like it just, that's all I need really. Like I, yeah, yeah. I manage all of the five bands in my own, you know, scheduling because I just want to and I need to for my own happiness. And, you know, I've gone for little periods where I haven't played much music and it's just not been a great time. Like it's what I'm here to do.
And that's all for this week. Thank you so much to Julia. Here is a list of her current projects and where to find them online. All the links mentioned can be found in the podcast description. Check out Moody Beaches at facebook.com/moodybeaches and moodybeaches.bandcamp.com. You'll find Hot Wings at hotwingsband.com and facebook.com/thehotwingsband. To check out La Bastard, go to labastard.com and facebook.com/labastard. Her newest band, Party Pest, can be found at facebook.com/partypest. And lastly, check out Hannah and Jessie Lee at facebook.com/HannahandJessieLee and hannahjessielee.bandcamp.com. Julia's choice for Artist of the Week is another Melbourne band, ModCon. Check them out at facebook.com/ModConBand. Also, while you're on Facebook, make sure to like the Musicians Map Facebook page at facebook.com/musiciansmap. This podcast and the website musiciansmap.org is dedicated to sharing knowledge and advice about music and the music industry. It's all about community, honesty, and positive progress. The experiences, stories, and advice shared on the podcast are given freely with the hope that you can relate to them and benefit from them. If you've found this podcast enjoyable or useful, make sure to check out the Musicians Map ebook and audiobook about building success in music. You'll find it at musiciansmap.org/books, Amazon, and Audible. And buying a copy of the book directly contributes to the continuation of this podcast. There's also a free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book to get your copy. If you have a suggestion for the podcast or for the YouTube channel, or you just want to get in touch and say hello, please do so via the Musicians Map Facebook group or by email at kane@musiciansmap.org. Thanks for listening and stay positive.